Let's do it. There we go. And I also got rid of the countdown option yesterday. I used to do like a 5-second countdown. Now I'm just like, let's just go.
Yeah, let's just rip it.
Sweet, man. Well, hello, everyone. Thank you for coming by for another episode. Really excited for this one. This is Mike Hobart, and I've been following you for quite a while, my friend. You are similar to me in the sense that you like to look all over the place and all the different aspects of society that Bitcoin affects, and you've written some amazing articles about it. So for this episode, I think that we'll start off with just a bit of your backstory. I always think we do that first. So why don't we just get a little bit of origin story from Mr. Mike Hobart? I know you've been through the sort of blue collar upbringing. You went through some military time. You had some exercise science background, and then you found Bitcoin. So it's quite an interesting one. Why don't you give everyone a bit of a story on who Mike is?
For sure, man. I appreciate it. And just so you know, and the listeners know, like the hum that you guys hear in the background is because I'm using the laptop that I took over to Kuwait with me on deployment, which is 7 years old. So bear with me with that background.
Amazing. Hey, that brings some immersion to the story. I love it.
Yeah. So like my kind of like origin story is like, I have fun kind of talking about it, 'cause it's like you kind of alluded to, it's all over the place. I like to start like very, like all the way back, because in order to kind of like I'm a annoyingly complex individual, for a lot of different aspects. I started out like as a child, just like very high energy, like good spirits and all that. But, my parents were both, middle-class, Iowans, and my dad was a pipe fitter. He was working all the time. He specialized in like nuclear power plants. So he was on shutdowns, which last like 6 to 9 months, and they would be outside of the state. So he'd be gone, quite a lot as far as like my childhood goes. And my mom was working and then going to school at night. So, that kind of like pushed me into a situation where, being the big brother, I had to help take care of my sibling and then also help my mom where I could. And that kind of like built up my work ethic. And then because of that, I was also spending all of my weekend time at my grandparents. So my parents, you know, had time to do adult things and, you know, actually like look after their marriage. And that caused me to really only have, I had one best friend and really only one friend, and that was my grandfather. And then in about fourth grade, he died, and that crushed me. Like that flipped my personality from like hot, like happy and bubbly to just, I went into a deep, dark depression that lasted through like high school. And that's important because in that depression, I kind of retreated back into video games at the time, because that was when like the Nintendo 64 had just come out. A buddy of mine had it, or a friend, like a child of a family friend that I ended up becoming friends with, because he ended up being the only friend I had at that time too. Watched him play video games, got into that, ended up becoming really, really good at video games. In high school, I was getting recruited by quote unquote pro teams at the time for Rainbow Six Vegas tournaments, which was like, that was a huge like self-esteem boost. But my parents already hated how much I was playing video games. So I was just like, guys, I really want to go, but my parents are not going to pay for me to travel down to Texas and pay for a hotel room in order with the off chance of me winning like the $50,000 pot or whatever. And that was like, as far as like the pro gaming circuit goes, that was back during like the genesis of MLG. Like when everyone was using, I think it was Clan Battles or Battle Clans. I can't remember the name of the website. It was this awful, like very like rudimentary, clunky website that everybody used to coordinate and have their own kind of like tournaments. And then during all that time, I also had an extremely high metabolism. So I was super skinny. And I was very quiet at school. So I got picked on by the girls and the boys. And I was also timid because of the depression. So I was like, I was just a soft target all around. That caused me to approach my father to help, ask him to teach me how to work out. Because he had, I was always looking at his trophies from his time in high school. He was a power lifter, an Olympic lifter. And that kind of, you know, that makes you look up to your father and everything. So he taught me how to do that. And then that kind of kicked me off down the rabbit hole of trying to learn how to grow muscle. And I enjoyed working out so much, as you know, any young man does that gets exposed to it properly. So I decided, I was like, well, I don't really know what I'm going to do for college. And from the point of junior year of high school, when I had also got my first job, I started kind of like delving into the partying scene to try and learn how to like actually socialize. Cause during my depression and the video games and all that stuff, I didn't really interact with people. Like, school was the worst part of my life. Like, I did not want to be there at all. And I decided, I was like, well, if I'm going to, you know, try and actually get girls and be the proper young man that every family wants their young man to be, I need to get bigger. I need to get more muscular. I need to start, you know, like getting girls and everything. So I'm going to immerse myself in the most chaotic socializing environment possible and start kind of just like trial by fire, learning how to communicate with everybody, which sucked. It was really painful. It was like really painful. And then I also got a love for alcohol too, because I learned that I have a high drug tolerance. So I was capable of putting them down and maintaining awareness and control, and that kind of like impressed people. So I was like, oh, cool. You know, I'm gaining people that like me, and people that like me for the wrong reasons. And through all that, I kind of pushed myself into another dark rabbit hole with the partying and the alcohol. And then because I get everything, as if you've been down that, like down that world, it's very easy for everything to just kind of slip into just partying and trying to, like, you know, get girls or get guys, because girls would do the same thing. I recognized where that was leading me, and it scared me. And because of my grades were also doing poorly. So I was like, okay. I kind of just, I was working at a gym at the time, and there was a recruiter that came in and worked out consistently, like every day. And he and I would talk, and I would talk with him about how I loved the military, because both my grandfathers, one was in the Army, one was in the Navy. And I just kind of like crossed a Rubicon point one day, and I was just like, all right, I'm signing up. Like, I'm tired of this. I need to rewire myself, rewire my life, like reorchestrate, recalibrate. And so I signed the paperwork, and within 3 months I had shipped off to basic training, which also happened to be New Year's Eve. If you've ever had to do basic training, New Year's Eve, the drill sergeants are not happy. Like, they were pissed off, dude. They were telling all of us that they had never had to do this before. They usually get the time off, so they're taking it out on all of us. And from that point, that would be around 2014. I get back that year. I went into the Army to do aircraft hydraulics. So I was working on Blackhawks and Chinooks. And then I deployed in 17-18. I was in Kuwait for about 11 months. And that's where I got exposed to Bitcoin, because that was the first time having salaried income, and it was going to be tax-free. So I was going to be making more than most people would be making with that like yearly salary or that annual salary, right? So I was like, okay, I don't want to end up becoming one of these sob story soldiers that gets in the Army as a specialist and blows all their money on some stupid Mustang 25% loan that they get on a base overseas like everybody else. And ended up having having that one, that a very similar story anyway, because when most of us, when we first come to Bitcoin, we also get into like the other side, like the crypto side, and lose a lot of money, right? Also with the trading, because I was over in Kuwait, I was also trading on BitMEX back in the day, you know, that 100x leverage, just YOLOing it and watching it disappear in 30 seconds. I was nothing like watching half of Bitcoin just vanish into thin air, you know? But from that point, overseas, there wasn't a whole lot to do. So I was spending on average about 4 to 6 hours a day studying Bitcoin and understanding the differences between Bitcoin and crypto. And like the block size wars were also happening at the time.
So this was like 2017-ish, yep. I'm guessing.
Yep. Okay. I went hard. Yeah. I went really hard into the Bitcoin thing as soon as I kind of came across it, because I had noticed it earlier that year. I think it had crossed $1,000 in spring of 17. And then by August it had crossed four. So I was like, okay, this thing tripled in like 4 months. Like, there's something to this. Like, people want it for some reason. I'm going to figure out why. And from that point on, dude, it's just kind of like a snowball from there. I continued studying and then doing my own thing and just trying to stack Bitcoin. And then 2020 hit, and that's where I started writing. And I started writing and put it on Twitter. And Will Clemente actually noticed my writing. And he was like, hey, I know Tyler LaRoche. You mind if I send this over? Bitcoin Magazine might want this. I'm like, yeah. And then I started writing for them and chatting with other writers. And one of my favorite writers, by the way, is Shinobi. If you guys haven't interacted with Shinobi, he's one of, like, we've gotten into some good arguments in the Bitcoin Magazine writers chat. But yeah, that's my synopsis, man. It's a little long, but like, I like to give like the full picture to understand like the real wibble wobble of the whole thing.
Yeah, dude, I love it. And I really appreciate you sharing that with us. It's so interesting how everyone has such a different path in, but there are those similarities, you know. Eventually you connect to this weird thing, and I feel like there's just typically the male brain gets attracted to it like more easily. Like, you hear a higher percentage of guys who just see this like it's a way to make money. It's kind of like a video game, you know. Like you said, you had like a gaming childhood. I totally had a gaming childhood too. I was playing the crap out of Call of Duty and Battlefield for all of high school. And eventually we come across Bitcoin and crypto. And like you said, crypto is like one of those early lessons we all have to learn. For me, that was definitely my 2017 to 2020. I was like more in the crypto side than Bitcoin because I didn't know what I was doing. And so many other people have the same sort of story. I skipped over it because I thought, oh, I'll get the next Bitcoin. You can make more money with all these altcoins. And it took me a while to figure that out because I, like so many other people do, I built sort of an identity and a brand around it. I started a blog about crypto, you know? And so the more that you sort of dig into this and like have that reputational capital around it, like I was starting to get all these followers on this like shitcoin blogging platform, it gets harder for some people to dig out of that. And it sounds like for you, you didn't get too deep, and you just focus on like really absorbing and not becoming a creator until you really had a good fundamental understanding, which is a mistake I made. I went too quick into the creation mode without staying humble and just learning. And there's also so many other different like stories you hear about people like finding different ways to learn about Bitcoin and just kind of implementing it into their life. I'm not sure if you know Austin Kelsey. He's a friend I made over in Austin, Texas when
Sounds
I was there.
Familiar.
Yeah, he's a super cool developer guy. He works at the Pleb Lab over there. And for like his story was he was an Uber driver, or maybe it was like a pizza driver, a pizza delivery guy or something, but just did a lot of driving. And he just started listening to Bitcoin podcasts. And so sounds like you had free time there. Anyone out there can have, you know, a few hours here and there to listen to podcasts. And this is why I'm constantly just trying to get people to learn. And in fact, it's actually kind of a funny transition. Just yesterday, so I'm in my hometown right now in Washington State visiting family for Christmas. And I was noticing just walking around how so many people and just young people, these middle school age people all have their headphones on. You know, we can all see that. But so they're so close to being able to just absorb infinite knowledge around the future and like these powerful new ideas that are being spread across the podcast decentralized information sphere. But you just know that they're listening to some like Cardi B or bullshit music, you know, like they're just filling their brains with garbage when they have this opportunity to really learn so much. Do you see that as well? Like, this is kind of just hitting me yesterday. Like, how do we get these people to cross over and start learning?
That's a hard one. 'Cause I was actually having this conversation with my girlfriend the other night. 'Cause I had posted on Facebook, you can't direct the indoctrinated to kind of realizing that they're indoctrinated, right? Like you can lead them, like you can lead them to the water, like a horse, but you can't force them to drink from it. The hard part is that the music nowadays is so mathematical, right? It's like music, it has an emotional pull, an emotional, like, kind of like it touches the soul. Like every piece of music is going to sing to somebody. So like, I don't really see anything wrong with like the younger generation walking around just listening to music the whole time. I think the interesting thing is, how do we get them to think about using their time in a different way? Cause like one of the fascinating things about this trend of everybody having headphones in, like when they're walking around and doing other stuff, one of my favorite things about learning about both Bitcoin and the body is that, economics is everywhere. So when we're talking about the body, we're talking about an economic system. Like all of the different organs and systems are different logistical pathways and different, like you can think of them as cities, or like cells being people, organs being cities. Like you can think of them that way, and they're exchanging resources. One waste product is a resource for another. Like, and when you think about that and understanding how the systems are very, very similar and they work very, very similarly, the cool thing about like the neurons of the body is that when we're thinking, they're firing, right? Like when we're doing anything, they're firing. But when we're thinking and moving, there's more stimulation going on. So it allows for if you're on spaces or you're listening to podcasts, I like to listen to podcasts or audiobooks when I'm doing something else, like physical.
Same.
Yeah.
I at least walk around, you know, like I used to have like the really good routine. I think this was back in like 2020, roughly, right when spaces started. I worked this job where I had like this entire office space basically to myself. So I would just walk in circles yep. after work and just listen to spaces and just, this is my routine. It's crazy how much it really helps you.
Yep.
To just keep your brain moving.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of what my whole like wrap around with the body and back to it is that like the important thing is understanding and appreciating that like people listening to educational material while they're doing something else is going to help them more deeply and more rapidly ingrain that information. Now, whether that information is good or not, you know, it's whatever. That's up to the person. And like, that's the importance of having a filter for quality information. But I think it's really cool that all these kids are walking around with headphones in. There's obviously downsides to that because maybe they're not learning how to interact with the meat space properly. But I think the real question is, how do we get them to value their time more, right? Because if we can get through that angle, then we can get into the investment and ROI on like time spent on things. And then you can get like, it's very easy to kind of like lead it into the Bitcoin conversation, right? Because we're talking about investing, we're talking about saving your time in like the most secure store of value and asset. Like all of that. Like, I think the biggest question is like, how do we get people to value their time more? And, but like to skip over you asking that question, I'm just going to lead us straight into it. I don't think people really learn how to value their time until they are put into situations where their time is limited and they are experiencing significant difficulty, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's such an interesting point there. How, you know, just getting people to value their time automatically sort of angles them toward using it more wisely and using it to really grow and think long term and lower their time preference. Because most people, I would say, they're just trying to kill time. You know, they are trying to escape from reality most of the time. And even these kids that are just out of school, like they're still sort of in that mindset of like, ah, oh, I was just at school for 6 hours. I got homework to do tonight for 2 hours. So like, I need to just escape. I need to detach myself from my reality. And I know you've even written about like the whole education side as well, how that is quite broken. But so I agree with you. It really starts with like getting people from all ages, not just kids, to just have more of a long-term vision and help get the world in that direction. Because I think you'd agree, it can definitely happen on an individual level if you give people the correct information. But I think there's a greater problem of fiat, which is really just impressing upon all these people that we see to be stuck in that hamster wheel of 9 to 5, or, you know, the constant schoolwork. Just every single one of these systems, it just seems like it is fostering this escapism mentality where people have no space to breathe. and they're forced into just these really intense schedules where they just can't thrive, you know? So I think that'd be a good transition, just talking about where Bitcoin comes into this. And, cause I know that you write about this quite a bit, and I talk about it quite a bit as well, how there's so many people out there that don't understand the big picture of Bitcoin, why we are so obsessed with it, these crazy Bitcoiners. It's not because we're all trying to get rich most of the time. Making money is nice, but we really see Bitcoin as a solution to this fiat problem. So could you maybe give us a little bit of an overview of what fiat is? I feel like we can't repeat this too many times, because there's people out there that hear us just throw this word fiat out there and they don't really know what it means. And then we could talk a little bit about how Bitcoin cures this societal disease we see overtaking people of all ages.
Yeah. So the very simple explanation of what fiat is. This is really just like a government mandated currency. That's basically what it is. Because like money, which the problem is the currency and money gets used interchangeably, which they actually mean very different things. So currency is mandated by a central authority, whether that's a central bank or a government, they tend to be the same thing. A money is something that is a medium. So a currency is a medium of exchange. Medium of exchange mandated by the state or a central authority. Money is a medium of exchange that is determined by the market, which is what gold ended up becoming, right? Because everybody wanted it. So everybody started using that as a medium of exchange. It's like, oh, you want gold? I want your axe, for example. So we're going to exchange them. The problem with fiat currency or the fiat... Okay, so I haven't explained what fiat is. So currency, we've already explained. It is the centrally mandated medium of exchange. The fiat part is essentially a paper, or what started as papyrus, representation of a store of value that's held elsewhere, right? So they started using notes as representing, like, this note is equal to however many ounces or grams of gold that is stored with this organization that's printed on the note. And when you take this, it's essentially like a bearer bond or a bearer note. Like when you take this to the bank or the holding facility to exchange it, you'll be able to get your gold. And that's like kind of like promising. It's like, this is what it's good. I have it. It's there. There's immediate problems with that system, right? Because you can make multiple promises on a single ounce of gold and just bet on or hope that both of them aren't going to come asking for the same amount at the same time. And you can play some really fun gymnastics with that and try to make it go a lot farther. And that's effectively the double spend problem, right? I mean, that's literally what it is. That's the double spend problem. And the reason why that's important for people to understand with like the Bitcoin story is that that's effectively what we're seeing right now, right? Because like we've gotten to the point of where, I mean, first of all, this has been done for thousands of years, like the fiat currency thing. I think the first to do it in the world in history was the Qing dynasty.
Yeah, somewhere in China. I forget the dynasty.
Yeah, I always think Ming, but I'm always wrong by that. And I always get corrected and then I forget to memorize it. You know, that's the fascinating part of the brain. I want to say it was the Qing dynasty or Song dynasty.
I just looked it up. It's Song dynasty.
That's what
I just
was.
Googled
okay,
it. Yeah.
Yep. I literally got it right before you mentioned it. Song dynasty. So they were the first ones to start it. Funny thing about them is they got invaded by Genghis Khan and the Mongols. They ended up taking this system and just printed it into oblivion.
Oh, really? So Genghis Khan like took it to the next level?
Yeah, they hyperinflated the currency.
Okay.
Like they hyperinflated it, destroyed the value of it. Nobody wanted it anymore, and then it collapsed. That has repeated over and over and over every couple of hundred years since that happened. And the funny thing is that we don't learn. Like we don't stop to learn. It's like, okay, maybe if we've attempted this over and over and over for a couple millennia, maybe it's guaranteed to fail. Maybe we should find something a little bit better. And that's the problem, right? Like you kind of have to keep doing that until there's a technological solution that provides you the recourse that you've been looking for. And I think we found it in Bitcoin. Maybe that ends up not being true. Maybe Bitcoin is just an iteration to the next thing. That's possible, but that's also what the marketing for crypto relies upon. But none of them have been able to do it properly because they haven't done it the same way that Bitcoin has done it. And the way that Bitcoin has done it is the only way you can do it properly. And we can, I'm assuming we'll probably have to go into that a little bit, but so that's the basis of like what fiat currency is. And like one more thing on the problems that we're running into today is that the US dollar is a fiat currency. The British pound is a fiat currency. They used to do the whole note system by saying it's worth however many ounces of silver, however many ounces of gold. That got done away with by Nixon in 71. I think it went active in 72. That was what people, if your listeners have heard, closing the gold window. That's what that was. Like he just like because we had made promises to Europe to help them rebuild infrastructure after World War II for trade agreements and all sorts of other things. The problem was is that because our dollar was pegged to gold, that they were allowed to have our trade, like our massive trade deals, settled in physical gold. And when that's happening, you know, they're all choosing the gold over the dollar. So like our gold coffers started getting pillaged like pretty aggressively. And Nixon was like, nope, we're done with this. We're not letting all of our gold get taken away. So he closed the gold window. And that effectively, that was after Bretton Woods. Was Bretton Woods' agreement coming out of World War II saying that all other major currencies were pegged to the dollar because we became the global reserve currency. That gave us a ton of power. Closing the gold window made all of those other fiat currencies pegged to a fiat currency. They're literally floating on nothing. And when we closed the gold, like you guys can go Google this, like what's the dollar backed by? It's backed by itself. That doesn't make sense. That's absolute nonsense.
Or perhaps fairy dust, you know?
Yeah.
One of these things that sounds really good when they talk about it on TV, but
yeah. And then, nothing. And then so like the problem at the, after that point was like, okay, it's backed by itself. We can just print however much of it we want. We can't just like go all full Genghis Khan and just like let the printer just go. Right. Because then you run into hyperinflation. Then you get a Weimar situation, which followed the Roaring Twenties. Weimar hyperinflation kicked off, and then everybody stopped wanting the German mark, and then the country collapsed, and the cause of the economy collapsed, and then you get into the Great Depression. The Great Depression provided a environment that was so difficult for the people of Germany that they propped up the Hitler's Socialist Party and the rise of the Nazis, and then you get World War II. So you don't want hyperinflation and government and currency collapse because it tends to not play out very well for everybody else.
Yeah, and it's so crazy how, of course, we're never taught this in school, how inflation is the true seed that grew that problem. And there's so, like you said, this has been happening for millennia. It's crazy how it continues repeating over and over, but it always happens in a little bit different way. Like there's a little bit different flavors spun into it. Like the Romans had the coin clipping, you know, this is the same exact yep. thing where they had like a certain type of metal that the coins were made of, and they started clipping little pieces off the coin so they could melt it and make more coins and have like a higher supply of the currency. And then they started, you know, diluting the metal with other cheaper types of metals so they could make more coins. It's all a different form of the same idea of there being a divergence of a very small money printing class where they can make their own money and create more of the currency, and everybody else who just has to continue using this money and is confused as everything gets more expensive because, you know, people today are thinking this as well. And it's like we said, it's the same story that happens over and over again. Things are getting more expensive and people are scratching their heads wondering why, because we are the most advanced we've ever been as a species. Maybe there's a whole other rabbit hole there. Graham Hancock, shout out.
Oh, yeah. We could probably get 3 hours out of that. Dude.
We're according to our current paradigm, we are the most advanced we know, at least in the last, you know, few thousand years. And yet things are getting more expensive. Like why are things getting harder to acquire, and our life is getting more difficult, the better we are at making things, that doesn't make any sense. And people are starting to ask these questions, and the reason is because the money is being printed into oblivion. It's diluting everyone at a really fast rate. And the only industries where you see this not happening is places like electronics, where the government does not step in. Look at healthcare as like a total opposite example, where the government is super involved in healthcare and it's super expensive and it sucks. And everything is totally inverted. I was just looking at a tweet the other day of the most doctor recommended baby formula is just like first five ingredients, seed oils. Like the entire big food, big medicine is so in bed with the government that these things have just gone into total madness. And then electronics, on the other hand, the government doesn't step in and, you know, become morphed as part of the TV industry because it says that's, you know, not important enough or something. But yet this stuff is getting cheaper and better at a really fast rate because the government's not involved. And so how much of a blanket statement would you say that is, that when government gets involved in something, it just starts sucking?
Oh, like my time working for the Army, I would absolutely agree with that. Like anytime the government gets involved is when inefficiency gets injected into any system that's involved. And like, there's actually like that actually, let's take that, like the government thing, and then also like the innovation and technology and markets in general. Like let's take both of those. So like one thing that people need to understand about the whole fiat money printing system is that in order to understand really how it jacks up the cost of living, you have to understand how the I can't remember the name, the technical term of the mechanism, but the closer you get to the money printer, the more power you have.
And Cantillon effect.
Cantillon effect, yes. And so like what people need to understand is that when you have this kind of like freedom to just print dollars at your, essentially at your whim by these politicians, is that you can get, you start getting funding going towards things that probably should not be funded. Right. So like political dealings and like kind of like back scratching with friends and all that nonsense, you end up getting to this situation of where instead of money going towards the most economical, most efficient, most innovative stuff, it goes to where the relationships are. And then you run into a situation of where that money goes to, say you have like somebody who is friends with a general in the military, right? And then you have somebody who's working out of a garage, and they have a very efficient way of, say, let's just go with building a smartphone. They can do it in the garage. It's extremely efficient. They have very, very cheap goods. They can do it very cheaply, and they can get it pushed out en masse rapidly. But then you have a situation of where, because they have a friend with a general, they ended up just like the general puts the word into somebody's ears, like, hey, I just want to, like, we should go with this guy. He's a good guy. He has a great product. Let's just go with him. The money flows to the guy that's not got the best execution. And then you end up getting to the point of where, because the less efficient party got the money, they're going to get their product to market while the other individual is not going to get it out there. And then the people don't know that that's happening. They only see the products coming to market. They don't see the backdoor dealings and the relationships and the bidding and all this other stuff. So then you get to the point of where, because that product is not the most efficiently made, the cost to make it goes up, which means the cost to sell it goes up. So like the iPhones that we're all using, they haven't really been updated for what, like 10 years. And like, I would argue that like by now we should probably have phones that are highly more technologically advanced than what we've got now. Like, sure, the processors are better and the memory has gotten massive, but that's really kind of like it, like that and the cameras, right? Like we should be having phones right now that like project holograms that like look real in my mind. But it's important for people to understand like just how like the fiat system injects inefficiency before the government gets directly involved. It just immediately starts skewing the market and everything. So like take that situation that we talked about with like the phone or like with the military, but then copy paste it to health, to education, to the medical side, because there's health and nutrition, right? But then there's also medical, and the medical stuff gets even more perverted with the government being involved in health insurance, right? So I just found this out because I was looking into the Luigi Mangione situation with the United Health assassination. And apparently the health insurance sector got intervened by the government to where they could only make 10% more than the cost of healthcare, right? So that it right there is a relationship where the health insurance industry is incentivized to incentivize the healthcare to continuously get more expensive so they can make more money, right? That's all right there. You're just like, oh, well, that explains why that is causing like the premiums to go up for the last like go like what 300% the last since 2020. But then you also have to take that situation of the inefficiencies because of the fiat currency injected. You have to include it in agriculture, right? Because then like my relationship with Texas Slim and the beef initiative, like you look into this Monsanto Bayer monopoly to where they are the sole proprietors of fertilizers, pesticides, and herbicides across all of the farmland in the United States. And they use mafia tactics to force farmland owners and farmers to take on their products, right? Whether it's the GMO seeds or whether it's the fertilizers, the pesticides, and the herbicides, they're forcing farmers to have to use their stuff. That's an inefficiency provided by the fiat system. Because if it was a truly free market where we weren't just printing money and handing it to our best friends, you know, that are politically affiliated, have ulterior motives. If it was just like a free market with a unmanipulatable currency, that value is going to flow to whoever provides the best product, right? And then it gets even worse because then you have to get into the livestock and like the medical side of the livestock with the injection of unnecessary vaccinations and antibiotics and all that. Because that costs the farmers and the ranchers more, they have to sell the beef for more expensive prices at the grocery store or at their market or whatever. So like you've got this fiat system creating all of this inefficiency all over the market everywhere. And it's feeding back into the system, causing the cost of living to go up. Because at the same time, those kinds of goods not being made by the best producer, that you can take that into, say, like production of piping, and that which is used for like public plumbing and electrical and like building buildings and like the use of lumber for like building, building apartment complexes and houses. And that's going to cause the cost of goods to go up, which also causes the cost of labor to go up. And then you include like the pharmaceutical industry and the healthcare industry and how they're incentivized to use a subscription based revenue stream rather where they want their people sick coming back for those pills instead of actually doing the proper thing of like, hey, you're obese, you're depressed, like you have all this stuff, maybe you should just go work out and eat some steak, because then you don't have to come back to me, then we don't have to put you on a pill like Ozempic, which is going to destroy your body. Like then you're going to be feeling better, you're going to be operating better, you're going to be doing better. And then that would allow the population to provide a greater effective workforce, which would bring the cost of labor down. But we have the polar opposite. We have the polar opposite to where the populace is not in good shape in mental or physical aspects, especially spiritual, because of those. And then you have a situation here also where our military is weak because of it. So like this fiat system just creates rot and inefficiency everywhere it touches. And it's important for people to understand that. That's what pushes so many of us to like look like Bitcoin ended up being a solution that we didn't realize because we were just wanting to make money to start.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So much that I agree with you in there. One of the things I wanted to toss from my own experience was, you talked about how there's been so little innovation, and the innovation that we have right now, when you really stop and think about it, is very unimpressive compared to what it could be. Like you said, you use cell phones as an example. Just last year, I had my 10-year high school reunion here in my hometown, and one of the eye-opening moments of that experience for me was we all got these time capsule things that we made where we answered this little questionnaire and we all got to look at the answers we made, and it was fun. One of the questions on there, which I don't even remember what my answer was, something stupid, but the question was, you know, what do you predict to be some amazing invention or innovation to be made in the next 10 years? And I really just sat there and thought about that. Like, has there been anything in the last 10 years that has really been an amazing, like, paradigm shifting, humanity advancing innovation? Like, what do we have? Like, we have faster phones, you know, like thinner TV screens. Some people might say AI. I mean, that's just like faster computers, basically. Like, what have we figured out? We haven't seen any major big shift after, you know, when you look at the pre-Fiat era, there are just constant massive innovations that we've made in society that often really improved our lives and improved the world around us. But now we just seem to have hit a complete standstill, or arguably are deteriorating. And that's sort of where you look at these. I love the trend of, I'm seeing more and more memes and just these videos of how even things as simple, just the design of the architecture around us, and the like street lights used to be like these beautiful designs, have like good warm light that was healthy. And now it's just this like awful, just piercing blue light that's horrible for your eyes and blinds you. And just the way that the houses are all designed, the apartments are all just total cookie cutter, you know, black and white square cardboard looking things. When you look at like the older design, was like very much, it had soul and heart to it, and people just cared more about the things that they were making. And it's crazy when you just look at how deep this, the fiat disease runs. Like you said, when the money is designed in such a way where we have these, the parasites that get to print their own, that's really the core of the entire thing. It's the Death Star that just spreads out this darkness. And it's really quite insane when you think about it.
Well, and like another thing to kind of like continue that rant or a extrapolation of like the fiat dollar disease that I call it. That also includes like the formulation of regulatory bodies, right? Because you wouldn't be able to do that if, like, say, if you were running off of a money that couldn't be just printed freely, you would have to get the people, the like through like some form of like temporary tax or bond or something, to put forth the capital to formulate a new regulatory body to perform a specific function. But if you can just print whatever you want and just go onto the computer and adjust the account to like add a couple million, you know, you can make a regulatory body for anything. And one of the big ones that I particularly liked learning about was Tom Luongo did a podcast, I think maybe a year or two ago, looking at, might have been a little bit farther, but I want to say a year or two ago, where he looked into the regulation of internal combustion engines. And how like the emission standards, right? And like the formulation of that and how that's been causing the cost of vehicles to go up. Like vehicles are astronomical. Like they should not be costing as much as they cost now, even with all the chips and everything that they've got in them, right? And like that's like that alone is a massive inefficiency for everything. Like that causes the cost of transportation of goods from the point of like, say like a mineral being mined to the point of it being smelted, like that causes that to go up. And then from the smelter to like the fabricator, that goes up. Then from the fabricator to the manufacturer, that goes up. And then the manufacturer to the market, that goes up. Right. And like, it might've been beating a dead horse, but I really want people to understand just where like these inefficiencies become exponential. And when like, and the real kind of reason of getting into this is that, so when you understand that that's happening all over the place in literally every direction you look, That means that the dollar that you earn is not going as far as you need it to, or as far as it used to go. So what do? You have to work more, which means less of your the time of your day is going towards having like a healthy mindset, right? And I wrote about this for my Substack in my Fifth Generation Warfare article that's I think is the most popular article I've written so far for that Substack. For people to understand, like, one of the aspects of fifth generation psychological warfare is this economic aspect, because when you have a population like America, like the United States of America, that is the majority are not wealthy, right? The majority started out maybe as middle class, mostly impoverished, or at least lower class, however you want to call it. Most of us had to start working our butts off, right? And like any little bit of excess you put to the side, you're saving for, you know, a better car to get to work, or an actual car to get to work. Maybe you're relying on a bicycle or whatever. In this fiat dollar disease scenario, you get put on what I call the fiat hamster wheel, right? And the more that the dollar is debased beneath you, the faster you have to run on that fiat hamster wheel, and the longer you have to run on that fiat hamster wheel. Anybody that's ran for a while or worked out for a while, you know that like when you, there's a limit, like you hit a specific wall, and then you start to literally break your own body down. And if you break your own body down, you break your mind down. And if you break your mind down, you don't, like, your spiritual health is going in the crater. Right. And like, we are seeing the outcomes of all of those right now, between all the OnlyFans nonsense with this Lily Phillips chick, whatever, this Hawk Tua girl, like they're all symptoms of all of this. Right. And all of this happening, like people not having time to really dedicate to like maybe their spiritual health, or having time to look into investments and make sure that their time, which is effectively what money is, their time and their energy is going to something that is going to be treated well and in turn treat them well. They have to take risks on things that they don't understand because they don't have the time to look into it to understand it. And if they're not doing it that way, they have to put their money with somebody else who is going to shave off a rake for themselves, because they're the ones doing the work. And most of the time, because they're humans, they aren't actually doing the proper work anyway. So they end up losing money, but then they take away their money anyway because they're the fund manager. It's just like, and the last part about this is going to be that because of all these aspects of people not having the time or the energy to do all this stuff properly, it makes them very malleable because they're exhausted. They're exhausted, they're malnourished, they're confused because they're spending all their time working all day. And then you go and see all these drones over the East Coast, and everyone thinks that the alien invasion is kicking off because they don't have time to understand what's going on. And then, like, on top of that, like, because of all that, like, in Hollywood, people don't understand what is real and what isn't. So, like, and this is all part of the fiat system. Like, it's I understand why people don't understand, basically.
Yeah, it's crazy. You can't blame them because the system is so rotten to its core, and all those aspects are working together to keep them in that state, because they benefit, as we talked about earlier, the big pharma benefits. They sell more drugs to sick people, and you know, in the doctors themselves are trained by big pharma to overprescribe these drugs to them, when people are naturally going insane from all of this and, you know, showing these physical and mental problems, as they should, as this crazy world is just beating all this into us, they are then put on pills that drag them even deeper down the hole and keep them addicted and make them part of that subscription model, as you said, where they just continue being a cash cow for these pharmaceutical industries. Big food industry loves it as well, because these people are just going to continue eating crap food that's like feeding that quick dopamine spike carbon crash. It fits right alongside that. And the government itself benefits from this, as I'm sure you understand very well. And I've done episodes on this in the past, You must have heard of Matthew Leshak. You wrote the book Fiat Food. Have you heard of that book?
I don't think I have, actually.
Oh, man. You would absolutely love it. It's incredible.
He's basically
spinning off Saifedean's book, and Saifedean has it on his sort of umbrella of books now because he was inspired by the Fiat Standard. There's a chapter about food, and he basically went down a rabbit hole of learning how the government itself is also incentivized for people to eat crap Fiat food and not eat meat because it hides the reality of inflation. Because as you were mentioning earlier, all of these, all of this fiat craziness under the surface is making real products that take real work, like beef. You can't make fake beef, or I guess they can now. They're making like fake Gates garbage version of beef. Yeah, exactly. So the real beef is becoming so expensive because you can't hide the inflation from that. These inputs and the regulations that are crushing the farmers trying to make real healthy food is making it more expensive. And so then they come in, we have the solution. We have this wonderful Beyond Burger soy slop that, you know, is we can just make in a factory and we control every input of that. And it's going to be the best thing ever. So red meat is bad for you now. Go eat this thing with 100 ingredients of poison. And, by the way, the big food and the big pharma love that too. They all love this. They all love it when people are stuck in this hamster wheel, as you said, of being sick, exhausted, more manipulatable, and just continuing to be a puppet and just going through the motions that are passed down to them as it's scary. But, you know, as we talk about, Bitcoin has a very real case for being the solution to all of this. And I feel like most people just still think that we're insane when we say that, because we keep talking about how it's going to fix this whole mess. Could we maybe do a little bit of an A to B elaboration here? From you have A, all of these problems that are coming up, to, you know, connecting the money printer itself is the reason why these things are happening. I feel like it's such a broad conversation. It's really difficult to like just talk about that specific thing. What is it about this money printer, if you could like summarize it, that leads to all of this mess across the entire world?
You can't really get anywhere properly if you're going to do the most efficient path or most inefficient path, right? Like, why, if you need to get from A to B, why would you go to Z first? Right? Like that just doesn't make sense. Because like, if you're, so one of the, I guess another good example, or a separate good example, would be for an individual in their day-to-day life. If you have task A that needs to get done, you do it in the most efficient way possible to get the right job done. Right. Maybe it needs to be slower a little bit so that the job gets done properly, but you do the job properly so you don't have to revisit again in the future. Right. The cure, the what the health establishment should be doing, but is not, or the medical establishment should be doing, but is not. They're doing the most inefficient path, which is the pharmaceutical, which is creating more problems into the future, not a solution. So if you're going to live your life looking for solutions, you want the most efficient. The most efficient way to the actual solution to the situation or the problem. Doing so frees up future time. Future time that allows you to look for other things that maybe serve to benefit you in new ways, or you can build on top of the solution that you just found, right? That's the human existence since ever, right? Fire allowed us to do a lot of things. Now, that's kind of like what we're getting at with what we're talking about, is like Bitcoin being the solution. So like, let me kind of like just take us down that journey. The reason being, or like, I guess the way you get to kind of like experiencing that, I would be shocked if any of your listeners have not tried saving dollars at some point in their life. And then you go, like, you save up $100, or say, let's say you save up $1,000 thinking you're going to get some radically awesome new TV or computer. But then by the time you get the $1,000 there, that $1,000 computer is no longer what you thought it was. Right. And then there's something else. Or at the very worst, it's like more expensive and it's the same damn computer. Like, cool. That makes a lot of sense, which a lot of people got experience with, like following the COVID pandemic, because 40% of the dollars got printed in like 18 months. So like what people need to get is like, okay, save up $10,000 over 4 years, or let's say $1,000 over 4 years, save it in dollars, save up $1,000 in Bitcoin over 4 years, see where the value goes, right? Like that's big, because like that, because like Bitcoin is just like sitting there floating on top of like the currency ocean, right? Because it's a hard asset, nobody can manipulate it. But then you got the ocean of dollars elsewhere. So Bitcoin's just going to rise with it. But that line, that value that you're trying to save, is staying at a fixed point underneath that ocean. You're going to drown, right? So when we get to that point, then we also kind of like, you know, one of the biggest annoying detractors is like, what if it gets hacked, right? Because everybody's bank account's getting hacked nowadays. The interesting thing with Bitcoin is that because of the way that the network works, which is the constant confirmation and reconfirmation on the ledger across all the different nodes into perpetuity every 10 minutes, right? Everybody confirming that all the transactions are the same. And if there is a node that is reporting transactions that are different, but it doesn't reconcile with the rest of the network, that node is going to get compartmentalized and pushed off like it's a disease, right? Because it's a bad actor. It's not playing by the same rules as everybody else, or it's not reporting the same information. That allows for security of transaction, right? And the really cool thing is, because of that, between that and then the amount of energy that's dedicated to mining, which like mining is like a whole other separate rabbit hole. Like we could do however many hours we do today, we could do 3 hours on UFOs. We could probably do 2 or 3 hours on Bitcoin mining and energy. But what people need to understand is like Andreas Antonopoulos said in 2017 that there was already enough energy dedicated towards the Bitcoin network that no single government or state actor could dedicate enough resources to make any sort of meaningful attack on the Bitcoin network. That was a major moment. So, and it's risen exponentially since then. Between the amount of energy that's dedicated and the ledger being constantly confirmed and checked on a 24-hour, 24/7, 365 basis, not having holidays or anything like the banking industry, your funds are safe. They're safe to such an extent that if you secure your Bitcoin wallet properly with the seed phrase that you get provided when you make a wallet on the network, that you get spiteful ownership of whatever value you put into that Bitcoin address, which is not something that's ever existed in the existence of the human species. Because of the fact that it's not dollars in a physical vault, and it's not dollars on a digital bank ledger at a centralized authority, and it's on the Bitcoin network, which is completely separate of all of that. Like the US government could disappear and everybody could be wiped off the face of the planet, but if one miner and one node is running at the end of the apocalypse, the network is still going. And if like with that situation, with all like the relationships of the different aspects of the network's operations go, you effectively be, as long as you own the, as long as you still possess the seed phrase, like you can still access the wallet, you can spitefully own your value, meaning you can take that shit to the grave if somebody wants to take it from you and they can never get it. That is like one of, like, besides the incentivizing perpetual energy generation, that is my favorite aspect of it. Because, you know, like one of the crazy things too is like, well, like, why would you ever need that if you're not a criminal? It's like, okay, like look back to World War II. Like how many different like groups of people had their value seized and they were law-abiding citizens? What better example do you need that you like to know that you can't trust your government? Like you
are
like,
you referring to the Weimar hyperinflation? Is that what you?
I mean, that's one, but like, look at what happened to the Jewish people.
Yeah.
Like when they were rounded up, like they were law abiding citizens. What did they do negatively? Oh, they had all their gold removed and seized. They had all their valuable assets seized. They got rounded up and they got sent to chambers. Right. And so like, that's like, it's an extreme example, but you don't really need, like, the crazy part is, like, we have these smartphones, we have these supercomputers in our pockets, we have access to all this information 24/7. You, like, it doesn't take much to go look for examples, or like look at the Gulag Archipelago. That's a great book to find out like what lengths like a government is willing to go when they are run by people with terrible ideas. And that's another inefficiency topic, right? Like, is communism and socialism not efficient at all? But like that's one big thing is like I think the American people have benefited from our position for so long that everybody has gotten so complacent that they have placed our government and our politicians up on a series of pedestals that are beyond foolish. Like, we are treating the U.S. government, the U.S. military, like it's some sort of god, and it's not. It's run by people. People are dumb. People make very inefficient decisions. Like, it's just, you got to protect yourself. Bitcoin's the best way to do it, at least financially.
Yeah, absolutely. And totally agree with all of that. And I wrote down a little note on the side here that I think would sort of sum these ideas up fairly well. Responsibility is eliminated in the fiat system, or at least the need for these people with all the money to be responsible is gone.
It's outsourced.
Yeah, exactly. It's outsourced to all the peasants below them that have to deal with the consequences because they just print their own money. So if they make a mistake, it doesn't matter. They just print more. And they're not bound to any sort of need for truth. And that really creates an opening for all these bad actors to insert themselves into the equation with big piles of money in their hands, who profit and benefit from these inefficiencies you've been talking about. They love the inefficiency because it usually equals dollar signs for them.
And every one of those inefficiencies equals a transaction, which equals taxes. Yep.
Yeah, more rent seeking in the middle, more of all of these like parasitic, just actors of all sources slide in and just take their cut. And I talked about that with Jamie Song. We did an episode on the fiat ruins everything idea. And he talks a lot about the rent seekers, how they're everywhere in every single industry. And Bitcoin gets rid of this entire thing. It gets rid of all of the third parties in the middle by making just the transactions themselves peer to peer. It just gets rid of that dynamic of there being two classes of people, the money printers and the fiat hamster wheel runners who have no choice but to obey and pay the consequences that they pass down, like you said. So huge deal that everyone needs to understand. It will give a lot of context for why it's such a struggle out there right now, because everyone's feeling it on some level. Even, you know, people who are fairly well off making good incomes, in some cases, they're feeling it even more than others because, you know, they have more inflation that they're dealing with, holding their money in cash. They're seeing a greater drop. But from the very top to the very bottom, everyone's feeling it. Well, I guess not the very, very top. They're loving it because they have the money printer. Literally everyone else is suffering. And one of the things that you mentioned there that I wanted to circle here was the communism and socialism not being efficient. And this is a concept that I haven't brought up for a long time. I remember in a very early episode of the podcast, this is one of the very first things I talked about, which I think is important for people to understand. There's a lot of messaging out there right now that capitalism is the problem, that capitalism is evil. We're in late stage capitalism. That is why everyone's going crazy and there's so much more evil and chaos in the world. But I would throw out the idea that we are more communist than capitalist right now because a central bank is inherently communist. The fact that the government gets to choose winners and losers, print its own money, throw the money wherever it wants, that is communism. Like when they get to control that stuff. And so since 50% of every single transaction is money, you know, you're someone paying money for a good or service, that money itself is being controlled by the government. I believe that at minimum we're 50% communist, probably more already. What would you say about that? Would you agree with me there?
Yeah, I would say it's probably higher than that. Because like as you were talking, I was kind of thinking that like the genesis point for the communist takeover of the United States was 1913 when the Federal Reserve got made. Because to your point, like communism requires, it's not that a central bank is an aspect of it. It requires a central banking authority so you can control and manipulate all those different aspects of industry of a civilization. So I would say we're probably closer to like, I would say probably 70%. Cause like 50 seems like it's too easy. It's like my elaboration on all the problems, like every industry is a problem. That's I don't like, I honestly,
kind of a lot.
Yeah. I don't know where you could look right now that there isn't an efficiency. Cause like the other aspect of like innovation and everything and the regulatory bodies that I've like that, those two of those together that I forgot to bring up was the like the US Patent Office. So, and we both touched on like UFO and UAP topics. So there's a documentary here that is tangential or parallel to that topic, but is more related to what we're talking about. Dr. Stephen Greer has a documentary called The Lost Century. And I recommend
it. What an interesting guy, man. I love listening to him.
Yeah. And this documentary, I think I've recommended to more people than any other because it's separate of the UFO thing. It's related to it. It touches it, but like, you don't have to be like an alien person to understand the value of this documentary. The entire documentary is about, like energy generation, innovations that have been successfully proven, but then gobbled up and buried, including burying the men that ended up making the innovations. Because they make these innovations, they're like, oh, I can produce all this energy for like a tenth of the cost or a tenth of the resources. And it's extremely efficient. It's extremely reliable. It's super cheap to use and implement. And then they end up winding up dead. Or the patent office has conspired against them to say it's a national security matter. And then they gobble up the patent under a DOD directive, and then they shelve it. And it collects dust because just like everything else, the DOD also, you know, needs funding, right? And they make more money off of keeping these forever wars going because the more soldiers that get broken, the medical establishment makes money off of. The more wars that continue to happen, the more money they make off the bullets that are made, the guns that are made, the equipment that all those soldiers require. And then they also get to use that to continue to spread their power, and they can spread their power through direct conflict and through war, or they can use the economic hitman model. Like it's like there is not a single angle of the American way that has not been completely tainted and destroyed by the fiat currency. And the founding fathers knew this was going to happen. Like the good founding fathers, they didn't want a central currency or a central bank, but we did it anyway because recency bias. Like the opposite of recency bias is like once something goes on long enough to where like the original people that were touched by the problem, like that value and those lessons go away, and they're like, oh well, like they didn't know what they were talking about, so we're gonna do it this way. Oh, just go happens to find out that like the way that we just did it. Our forefathers had warned us about, and they knew the problems that were going to come of it. And we ignored them anyway, because we thought that, you know, just because we are a generation older, that somehow we're more evolved than they were, or Romans. That's another topic, by the way, that I've ranted about. Like people think and talk and act like we are somehow more evolved than our barbaric ancestors during the Roman era. We are literally Romans with smartphones. That's it. Like we're still savages. We still like tell people that we're going to like murder them and like, you know, shit down their throat, like everything. Like I took Latin in college. I translated some letters from Roman generals. Those dudes talk worse than we talk now. So just so everybody knows, there is zero improvement since the Roman era.
Yeah. Yeah, wow, there's so many spicy rabbit holes there. You mentioned the economic hitman model. That's funny you mentioned that, because I just went to my little hometown library a couple days ago and they had a book drive going, and the book that I picked up, the one book I found that interested me was The Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins. So I'm really excited to read that.
He has a fourth edition out now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. There we go. I mean, I hear that this is, have you read it yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. I read the third edition and I was working on listening to the fourth edition. It's really important that people get like those later editions, because he had attempts to assassinate him and it was confirmed. It's not like he was just speculating. Like, he went to the hospital because he started internally bleeding for no reason. And the doctor was like, you don't interact with this toxin without somebody wanting to kill you.
Wow. That's freaking crazy. Could you give us, I'm not sure how recently you read it, but could you give us a little bit of an overview of that book? Because I think that that is just a great encapsulation of where another thing you talk about in your writing a lot, just the violent nature of these fiat psychopaths, how there's always this violence going on. Like you said, you know, we profit off of war. Like, the war machine loves death and destruction and taking over these countries and making them our slaves, basically, financially. Have you read it recently enough where you could give a little bit of an overview of that, just so people can get the gist of it?
I haven't read it recently, but I've read it over and over so many times that, like, yeah. So the way that an economic hitman works is, first of all, John Perkins, in his book, he talks about how he didn't know that he was an economic hitman. So that's also an important aspect for people that are like kind of like trying to understand how the intelligence side of things works, like the CIA, NSA, DIA, special operations. There's a sleight of hand with almost everything. Like, even like if you saw that Candace Owens did a live stream the other day with the sailor from the USS Liberty, there's an intel op there, because he had, like, they had no idea. The military told them they were mapping the bottom of the ocean when they had
what was the USS Liberty again, just for a refresher?
It was a ship that was attacked, a U.S. ship that was attacked by the Israeli forces. And it was during, I think, the 7 Years War. Is what it was called? I can't remember. It's 7 Days War or 7 Years War. I can't remember.
What period was this? Was this like decades 70s, ago? Or?
70s okay. or 80s.
Gotcha.
And so, like, that was an important disclaimer. Is like, most of the people that are involved with intel stuff, a lot of times they don't know until later. So John Perkins doesn't know he's an economic hitman. While he's ignorant to this fact, he had a job of going to different, typically South American or Central American countries, and pitching to them infrastructure development projects. Like, hey, we're the U.S. We're the good guys. We are offering to help you build out, a natural gas power plant and the infrastructure to bring reliable electricity to whatever city or cities. And we'll give you, you know, this discount or whatever. Like, it'll be like, you're going to pay us back at this rate. It has to be paid back in dollars. Oh, and we can do a little bit of like trade, like finagling here, so we can get some more goods. We can get you like iPhones and Nike shoes and Jordans and whatnot, and like all this other stuff. So like, they'll send in guys like John Perkins to do like kind of like run the numbers on like where they're going to be able to make improvements, what those improvements are going to look like. And then John started realizing that they were fudging the numbers intentionally, right? Like, they're making lavish promises or whatever. They're saying like, no, this value means this, like we're doing like whatever. So they're making these promises. These countries agree to do this because everybody wants reliable electricity. Everybody wants iPhones, apparently. So they make these agreements, but then after these agreements start, these projects get spooled up, then there will be intentional sabotage of these projects. But they'll be wrapped up to look like, because it's going to be our people doing it, they'll be structured and executed in a way of where it looks like things just went wrong, or better, they did things wrong. Like, they did things not by like what we said or by the book. So their project gets catastrophically crippled, to where their payments for the infrastructure not only get dragged out almost indefinitely, but then we tell them, it's like, hey, that's going to cost you more because we have to come in and do repairs and then put like new infrastructure back up, right? Like new power lines or whatever. And so that's the economic hitman right there. Like that's basically the gist of it. It's like, hey, we'll help you build. They start building. We sabotage it. They get crippled. They become indebted to us forever. Bang. We have a subscription model. We're making a ton of money. They're paying interest on all that debt on top of paying the debt back. We move on to the next one. That's it. That's it right there. And like on top of that, this is another rabbit hole. Apologies to you, Ben, and everybody else. Keep going.
I love it.
There's another rabbit hole here, which I've been going down for the last like 2 years, Operation Gladio. There's also things been going on from the intelligence community of where they use these infrastructure projects to get access to these countries, and then they steal the resources out from underneath of them. So one of the examples would be over in Indonesia, it was early 19th century, so right around World War I time frame, there had been a discovery of the world's largest gold deposit at the time, but it was hidden. The individuals that climbed the mountain were Dutch, and they decided that because the gold was so valuable, they're going to try and find a way to get it out without anybody knowing. Like, they don't want the Indonesian government knowing any of that, right? So it ends up, they end up like hiding hiding the map up on the mountain under literally a pile of stones. So I think it was Alan Dulles, maybe somebody else, had caught, like, they found out about this, went back up, got that book, found out where the actual, dude, this stuff is like, you can't write a better story, right? And they end up going back, finding this massive gold deposit, which also came with a ton of copper because they tend to go hand in hand. And Alan Dulles finds this out. He was director of the CIA. He ends up getting Standard Oil to also get in on this. They go to the Indonesian government, convince them that there is 1/15 the amount of actual gold there, right? Because in this book written by Greg Poolgrain, they misrepresented the measurement. So one thing that the English do versus the Dutch is when we say grams, we write a G, right? But the Dutch at the time, when they say grams, they write GR. And if you flip them in the English version, GR is grains versus grams. Major difference in the measurement. So they did that unintentionally, right? Because that's another intel thing. It's like, oh, we didn't know we were doing that. We're the smartest people on the planet, but we didn't know that we did the grams versus grains flip-flop. Yeah, okay. Roll your eyes and just keep charging. So the Indonesian government agrees to Standard Oil to remove mine this gold out of the area at 1/15 the reality that was there. The other 14/15 got sent out in the slurry, which is like the unpurified, just kind of like mix of everything that got siphoned out. Nobody knows where that gold went. None of it. Hundreds of tons of gold. I think it was like 300 tons or something like that. Like, it was a massive amount, and nobody knows where that went. That's just Indonesia. And a colonel that I've been working with every once in a while on Twitter, she's one of the ones that kind of like sparked me onto this whole thing because she was looking for the book, and I was like, oh, I'll see if I can help you out. I ended up getting the book for her. She's covered this topic for years. She's been doing spaces on it for this entire year. She has found evidence of this precise strategy being deployed in 37 countries. Imagine the amount of economic power you can accumulate by doing this 37 times to different countries for gold, copper, whatever. And that's all enabled by the fiat system. Because those of you, like, I'm a millennial. Ben, you look like you're a millennial.
Just turned 30, yeah.
The day before 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld came out and said that we couldn't account for, like, what, $1 to $2 trillion of the defense budget? Where do you think that unrecoverable money is going? It's going into stuff like that. Like, this is another massive inefficiency. And like that, like doing those kinds of projects is screwing up a bunch of shit all over the other side of the world. Then we go in with our economic hitmen to go in there and tell them we're going to solve the problem. Then we sabotage it. Then we get more, like, it's a failing system because you're a parasite on everyone else that you're supposed to be working with versus the Bitcoin system. Because you can't do that, because you can't just take, right? Because I mean, you can take, but then people are going to get wise and then they're going to respond in a way that you don't want them to. It incentivizes cooperation. Like, yeah, if you want to benefit, you have to work together, and that's world changing.
Yeah, once you have like an underlying money that actually allows people to all transact, work together, not have these massive divergences of power that just allow all this evil to happen. And one of the, first of all, thanks for sharing that story. That's super interesting. I've never even heard of any of that. So awesome. not for some people, but for the knowledge base of the people trying to learn the depths of this corruption that we're looking at. One of the phrases that comes to mind for me is just this idea that you're allowed to love your country, but not love your government. I think that's where we both are. I know you've talked about that before. Like, you're very patriotic. I am too. I love the USA. I love America. I think that we could really be a great place, but our government is just completely off the rails and has been for a long time. And it's been allowed to just morph into this really evil, cancerous entity that goes. And like you said, all those Central South American countries that went in and just completely punked into becoming debt slaves to us. So, and that didn't even go toward making our country like really holistically better. It just came into feeding our fiat system, which hurts us too. Nobody wins here except for the very top few. And I've spent a lot of time traveling around South America recently, and I definitely want to see more in the future, but you can get that vibe that, you know, people, you know, it's really deeply ingrained that, you know, the Americans or the people from the USA are not trustworthy. And you can kind of feel that, you know, and you can't blame the people because they're right. They're correct. The only thing that they're really wrong about is that, you know, it's the governments. And this is always the thing is like, it's so easy sometimes for people to slip into this, you know, sort of subconscious dislike for a certain country of people, you know, when almost every single time it's really the government of that country that is the problem, that's making the moves and making the headlines and creating these negative stereotypes. The people are wonderful 99% of the time, but it's the government's.
And you know, Ben, like I also have come around to the the position or the point of view that I understand like those people not liking Americans, because like from their point of view, like, how can you not understand that your government is doing this? Right. And that goes back to like one of the rants that I had earlier talking about how people don't have the time to look into this stuff. And like, that's where this disgusting negative feedback loop parasitic system supports itself, because you push the people on the fiat hamster wheel so hard to where they can't look into this stuff. They don't have the time or the energy. They don't want to find out that their government is doing all this terrible shit. So they just put their heads in the sand. They don't want to find out, because I've had family members and friends, like, just from the COVID stuff, like, they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear any of it. And so like, if I'm like a citizen of Venezuela, when I interact with Americans, I'm going to be pissed off at all of them for, I mean, maybe not, you know, 100% of the time, but I'm going to hold it against them. It's like, you don't know what your own government is doing to our people. You don't know what your own government is doing to your own people. Like, I'm not going to respect you because of that. I'm not going to appreciate you because you need to go home and you need to educate yourself. And there's
true.
And yeah. I would say it's probably 99% of the population has no idea how terrible this system is, not just for the American people, but for the world itself. And Ike, like you said, I'm very proud American. I love our people. Our people are awesome. Like, especially here in the Midwest, you're not going to find anybody better, like, in the planet, in my opinion. But I also hold it against all of my friends, family, and neighbors that they're not dedicating time to understand what's going on. Like, it is your responsibility to understand what your country and your politicians are doing. And that's another negative of like all of this, is like the fiat system allows for all these different systems to, you know, the inefficiencies, but then the regulatory bodies. So it increases complexity. I mean, look at our tax code. Like, who? No, nobody understands the tax code 100%. And it's designed that way. Or like, look at the book. What's the book? Three Felonies a Day. We're all committing a minimum of three felonies per day, and we don't even know it. That is the system setting itself up so it can defend itself in case you were to step across a specific line. It's like, all right, we'll lock you up. Like, I don't blame these international individuals for not liking Americans. But the important thing, and like, I'll get back to like what I actually kind of like went on this rant for, is at like with Bitcoin veterans, one of the issues that we've come across is soldiers, both currently enlisted and veteran status. It's usually me. I don't know why it's not anybody else, but it's usually me of the five founders that I get pushback from soldiers saying that, like, suggesting or directly saying that anything to challenge the strength of the dollar is patently anti-American. Like, no, like, actually the operations of the dollar are patently un-American. Like, the politicians that are slipping in all these ridiculous clauses and different projects into these omnibus bills to try and get funding for taxpayer dollars and send over a couple hundred billion to Ukraine, which is a war we shouldn't be involved in anyway. Those are un-American, because we could have spent, what, $1 billion on Western North Carolina, and those families wouldn't have to be in cold. That's another.
Don't even get me started on that, dude. That's a rabbit hole.
we could have probably the things that we've talked about. We could probably have four or five different podcasts just alone, because like there's stuff that we encountered out in North Carolina while we were helping out.
Is that where you are right now? You're in North Carolina?
No.
Okay.
I'm at my home in Iowa, but okay, cool. There are some things that we encountered in North Carolina that, I think would cause people to be up in arms, like literally with their firearms. Like, there's probably three or four or five of them alone. Like, people have no idea how much these regulatory bodies have been getting in the way of efficient work getting done. That's another fiat dollar disease problem.
Oh, I'll go even further. I think that the government created the storm. That's how crazy I am, Mike.
Oh, we could go into the geoengineering.
The whole geoengineering side of things. Yeah, I mean, that was super high value land that they wanted to take over, the lithium mines, you know, and it just seemed like a total, you know, copy and paste of the Lahaina situation where, you know, they just roasted the place for the high value land, you know.
Keep your ears to the ground for some stuff about nuclear facilities in the area too.
Really?
Yeah.
It's just crazy, man. Real quick, are you good on time? I know I put the calendar invite to right now. Is that are you all good, or you
have to jump? Like, let's do like maybe 10 more minutes, and then I gotta get going.
Cool. Sweet. Yeah. So one more question. Before that, we glazed over the free energy side of things. I want to quickly touch back on that because that is such a fascinating one. You talked about Stephen Greer, and I haven't listened to him in a while, but I remember just going through his podcast a while back, how, like you said, there are so many of these stories of these people claiming and having quite good proof, according to him, that they have found these Tesla, like, and I'm talking like the real Tesla, not the Elon Tesla, this free energy that has essentially been around for like potentially thousands of years or longer. You know, when you go into these rabbit holes of the way that old societies were built way back in the, you know, the times of the pyramids, and these old buildings all have these very interesting structures where it seems like they were gathering energy from the Earth's field. You know, there's actually a way to gather energy without needing to have all of these modern crazy contraption and burning coal and oil and windmills and solar panels and even eating any of this stuff. So how much have you dove into that rabbit hole of, you know, what sort of things are out there, what Stephen Greer is looking into, and what you believe is to be the future? Because to me, this is like so many other rabbit holes, it has a maddening side of these motherfuckers like have been hiding this from us, and they're literally murdering people that find it to protect profits for the energy industry. But it's also quite hopeful to me, because I think that this can only be bottled up for so long before we see this incredible renaissance period where the bottle finally flies open and the cat's out of the bag. Like we were talking about, there's never been really a huge innovation in a long time. I think that would actually be one that would blow everyone's minds. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I've gone down this rabbit hole pretty extensively too. I think that, and this is also part of, if you've seen Eric Weinstein has been up in arms lately. He's found out like how much of this fiat system has tainted the the institutions of academia and the regulatory bodies that are both part of academia and part of like the energy industry. I think that the free energy thing has been aggressively buried for good reason. I mean, like you brought up Tesla. JP Morgan torpedoed his Tesla tower because he found out it wasn't a radio tower. It was to transfer electricity across hundreds of miles of geographical space without losing latency, right? that's insane. And then like I also think that aspects of physics has been buried too to try and make it seem like the ether is not real. I think the ether is very real. I think that there's a lot of aspects of different types of energies that we have been kept in the dark on. So I have a theory that actually I've been refining with my girlfriend here, where we think that churches were originally designed to both produce, attract, and accumulate power and then or energies and disperse it through the ground, through the communities that were built around them. Because back in the day, towns and villages were built with the church at the center. Now, part of that was because God was at the center of everybody's life. And that, like, yeah, I'm all on board for that. But I think that there was also an ulterior aspect that maybe they knew what was going on. Maybe they didn't. But what we think was going on was that because you look at the steeples and everything, and the steeples tended to have like a gold plating on them, which is one of the most efficient conductors that we know of currently. I think that there's possibility. And then you take in like cymatics and vibration and all that and frequency and how they were using these organs to produce very specific tones, and the buildings, the cathedrals were structured in ways that they look beautiful, but they're also very, the physics of them were very interesting to capture vibrations and sound waves and redirect them and keep them kind of like almost like, if you look at like the imagery for like a speaker, like the sound is reverberating out, right? Like you think of like a church as like producing these kinds of like healing sounds. Cause like, there's theories for what, 128 and 412 hertz or something like that. They're supposed to be like healing frequencies, which I've looked into the Solfeggio frequency stuff, and I've slept listening to them. And I gotta say, my sleeping feels pretty dang good after listening to that stuff. And then there's also the hemisync aspect, which if you've been down the remote viewing rabbit hole, hemisync is pretty cool too. But I think a lot of this has been, I think we've been kept in the dark on purpose. You can't meter this stuff. And if people are capable of getting access to, say, free energy, or they're capable of healing themselves through the power of like just like sound and vibration and proper nutrition, then they don't need all these different institutions that have been built up around them. And it directly threatens the power structure that is built around the fiat system.
I love it, man.
You had originally asked about free energy. I think free energy is very real. I think I'm going to assume you have. So I'm going to suggest it to your listeners. If you guys haven't looked up Ashton Forbes, if you haven't watched his videos around the MH370, the flight that disappeared in the Indian Ocean, I think almost 10 years ago, if you haven't looked into that, his own personal investigation into that led him, like I was one of his like very early followers, and I was DMing him on Twitter. I'm like, hey, you need to look into zero point energy. It's like, ah, well, that's kind of frou-frou. I'm like, no, you need to look into zero point energy because it explains how all of this stuff is possible. And you look, you know, when you look into it and you like, if you get the like ethers all around us, because like when it comes to science and physics, like we know that there's so much of the light spectrum that our eyeballs can't pick up on, but is in existence. If we know that about light, which light is just energy, then we should also be able to extrapolate that there are lots of different kinds of energy that we don't know about because we can't perceive them. Makes sense, right? Like rational Socratic method style. So that would suggest that there are energies out there that maybe we are ignorant to, like say the ether, which has been proselytized on by Tesla for one. And I believe Einstein also talked about it, and Stephen Hawking, but there's different names for it. There's ether. There's, I can't remember the other different names right now, but anyway, it's out there. It exists. We've been kind of like directed to not look into it because it's frou-frou or magic or whatever. It's out there. If it's out there, it's capable of being captured and utilized. And Hal Puthoff is another individual, a physicist who like what he exclaims is like the amount of potential energy that's in existence. If you could capture it, there's so much energy in a spoonful of space, like the volume that it could, that if you were to capture all of it, it would boil all of the water and all of the oceans on the planet. That's insane. But that's the fabric of reality right there. And so zero point energy is very real. And if we were capable of capturing it, like then you're talking about getting to the point of like a civilization of where you get true freedom. Because that's the only reason that we have government is like it's in a small government allows for maximum efficiency because it allows for all of us to come together to agree on specific terms so that I can produce axes, you can produce steak. Maybe you only want one axe, but I'm going to continue to want steak. So I'm going to trade you an axe for like a quarter of a cow or whatever. And then I'm going to produce more axes for the rest of the community because that's my expertise. So I can get other goods and services out of them. And then once it gets to the point where nobody needs that anymore, then I have to learn a new skill so I can get more food and more resources than everybody else. That's the efficient operating procedure for all of humanity. We do it because we don't have the time or the energy to produce all this stuff ourselves. But if you get access to free energy, you get closer to being able to do that. And that's why they don't want it.
Mike, I don't think I've ever been more excited for a sequel episode as immediately as I am right now, dude.
Let's go.
My notepad is exploding with things to talk about. I know you got to run, so we'll finish this off here. I can't wait for another one because I have so many things to mention just off of that short message alone. One recommendation I'll throw out. I'm not sure if you heard of the movie The Primordial Code, but I have not.
I'm writing it down.
I just interviewed the filmmaker behind that. He literally talks about, he goes into a church and they talk about the cymatics and basically makes the case these were energy centers, exactly as you just said. So I'm going to
no
throw
way.
You a link.
Okay.
I can't remember
got,
if it was
got,
the first.
I've got, a date, or, I've got a date night video then.
I can't remember if it was the first or the second one. He's made a sequel already, just came out, but I'll throw that your way. And where can people follow you, Mike, for more of this excellent signal?
I appreciate that. That's a compliment. I'm on Twitter. My Twitter username is the Mike Hobart, THEE Mike Hobart. Exactly how it's spelled down below for the video. And then the other thing would be my Substack is Just Hear Me Out on Substack. I have a link to it on my Twitter. So if you want to find it, you can just go there. I haven't been, writing as much for the Substack cause I go in spurts. I like to like, when I'm in the flow of things, I like to get all my thoughts down and then pushed out. So I've been kind of like on a hiatus, but I'm also working on finishing up, putting things together into a book that I'm writing about specifically about Bitcoin, how like basically all the stuff that we talked about here, I think is going to spark off a second renaissance.
Amazing, so, dude. Can't wait to check that out.
Yeah. And hope cool. like I should, I've been doing all the work. I should be able to be getting that out. Hopefully spring of 2025.
Well, we have our date planned for round two, my friend. When that comes out, we're going to bring you on. We're going to talk about it and dive into even more fun rabbit holes. Looking forward to it.
Hell yeah, dude. I'm down for that.
Sweet, man. Thank you so much for coming by. I really, really appreciate you taking the time, and we'll be in touch, my friend.
Thank you, man. It was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to the next one.